The Word of Mouth podcast from NHPR is made possible with support from you, our subscribers, and from
Heinemann, a provider of resources written by real teachers for real classrooms. Heinemann values teachers as decision makers and students as curious learners. Discover the path to lifelong professional learning at Heinemann.com. Heinemann, dedicated to teachers.
This is Word of Mouth, your questions answered, your state explored. I'm Erica Janik, here with Nick Capodice and Hannah McCarthy. And we've got a bit of an American History Independence Day bonanza for you today, starting with the winner of our Civics 101 student contest. Nick, Hannah, what was this contest?
We asked for high school students across the country to submit ideas for a Civics 101 episode. They would record a demonstration of it, send it to us, and we would help produce that episode.
And we got so many great entries.
Yeah, here's a couple.
We the people, in order to form a perfect union, do whatever we doing to keep the union moving.
Do you know what eminent domain is?
No.
Okay, it's the government's right to take any land from civilians without permission.
Kennedy won that. The presidential debate was televised. I mean, he dominated that debate.
So who actually won?
Her name is Adia Sambaqui.
Adia submitted this amazing idea for a radio drama about the Articles of the Confederation and the creation of the Constitution.
So maybe we should remind people what the Articles of Confederation are.
Articles of Confederation were sort of our first governing document from 1777. And it was sort of agreed upon as a very weak document. And one of the reasons it was weak is because it gave very little power to the federal government and a ton of power to the states. So in 1787, as I'm sure most of our listeners know, we all came together for a convention in Philadelphia to make a new constitution. And that's what this piece is about.
Well, we'll hear more from Adia a little later in the show, but without further ado, let's hear Adia Sambaqui's radio drama, Unconventional.
When you've never truly been free, and then you later wage a whole war for the sake of freedom, you're going to need to figure out how to define freedom on paper. And then make sure it applies to each and every imaginable situation you're about to face as a newly liberated nation. Farmer George didn't take the whole revolution thing well.
You're lost without me. Lost!
But America didn't immediately become the young, independent nation that don't need no motherland she wanted to be. For example, the Articles of Confederation.
We don't really have to pay your taxes, only state taxes.
We're about to get into a land war with Indians without your permission.
We're going to make it impossible for anyone to try to fix this document.
I thought you all hated this document.
Absolutely.
Of course, I know.
The federal government suffered a decade of this. 55 delegates, the most
white and male
citizens, were cordially invited to indulge in the privilege of rebirthing government right here in the Philadelphia State House. And like actual labor, it was painful. This brings us to talking point number one.
Beef Franks in the building!
Yeah! Beef Franks is indeed in the house. Large Benjamin, how would you describe your approach to proposals during the early days of the convention?
What's with the surveillance device?
My camera?
Yes, that thing.
Oh, I'm just recording a little documentary about the beginning of our American Constitution. I thought it'd be sort of neat to archive all the debates and decisions here.
You'd rather spend your day listening to a bunch of old jabronis ramble about rules and regs? That's really sad.
How would an old jabroni like you describe your approach to proposals during the early days of the convention?
Obviously, I would describe it as calm, cool, and collected. The sort of level-headed wisdom and guidance severely lacking in our current government. Supermajority? Sucks. One House Congress? Sucks. The Articles of Confederation? Sucks. How are we going to change the AOC if even the method of amending it sucks?
We keep the Articles of Confederation and work hard to improve it.
And you are?
David Brearley of New Jersey. That's spelled B-R-E-A-R-L-E-Y. I believe that maintaining a union is going to be difficult, no doubt. But no one guaranteed governing was easy.
Well, David Barfley.
Yes.
You're incorrect. We burn the Articles of Confederation and put a new constitution in its place.
Burning it seems to be easier than governing.
Any questions?
What if we create a new constitution and it fails?
Then I'll guess I'll see you in another 10 years, Charles Pickney. Any more questions?
Jonathan Langdon of New Hampshire raises his hand.
Where's Rhode Island?
Listen, kid, I may be but 88 years old, but I know a thing or two. If Rhode Island was afraid of a powerful federal government, let her be a coward in the comfort of her own home. We'll be the ones with a legacy.
Okay.
Jonathan Langdon, why did you choose to say something so controversial, yet so brave?
Well, what happened was, I didn't know what body of water surrounded Rhode Island, and I was concerned the delegates didn't catch a ferry in time. But I guess it's a misnomer. No island, just a state. Tell Franklin, and I'll hurt you.
Aight, if we ignore what Langdon just said, I think we can call it a wrap. All those in favor of revising the Articles of Confederation?
Aye. Nay.
See you tomorrow.
Talking point number two. While we were gone, George Washington proposed a way to prevent the federal government from acquiring too much power.
I serve as a general in one war. Just one. And now whenever I walk into a room, those guys address me as sir. Someone called me His Excellency last night. I'm not as excellent as they think I am. Or maybe not as excellent as they think I think I am. Anyway, I'm trying to get three equal branches of government to keep each other in check all the time. Only thing is, the executive includes a president. And if those fools elect me, I swear I'm gonna flip.
Do you know how much federal government accomplished under the AOC? That's right, nothing.
We did do a couple good
things. Nothing! Instead of one single stick, we all get three branches, stay with me, of government. One branch is the legislative, who writes up laws of our nation. Once we work out what Congress is actually made up of, those representatives will be responsible for proposing new laws. The executive branch ensures law is being carried out in the country. The president is the head of this branch, along with his cabinet. Finally, the judicial branch interprets the law passed by Congress. Each branch has the ability to override the actions of another. No branch is more powerful than the other. Stop this right now! Stop this! I just want to rest!
I can't believe Washington invented equality.
I love a woke queen.
He's not excellent.
Thank you!
That's a terrible plan.
All right, let's calm down.
It smells like monarchy.
If my plan was so terrible, then why did it just pass 8-4?
It did? Aw, damn it.
The delegates also tried to turn the 9 out of 13 state votes needed to fix the Constitution.
If there was supposed to be a takeaway, it died.
The voice of the people. Hey, did anyone ever tell you you'd make a good president?
Knock it off.
Yes, sir. Charles Pinckney of South Carolina, what do you hope to accomplish in order to soothe the rocky process of passing laws? Hello? Pinckney?
Huh? What?
You asked for an interview. I'm giving you an interview.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm a little nervous.
Just answer the question.
What was the question? Oh, we all thought supermajority was a good choice 6 years ago. I was like, 9 out of 13 states, we get along pretty well. This won't be too bad. We'll regularly see at least 9 of us in Congress agree to a law in order for it to pass. And then they were like, being difficult is so funny. Let's do it for 6 whole years. And I was like, no, don't do that. Stop. And they were like, whatever, loser. That's why no one loved.
Pinckney, you should probably talk to someone about that.
Probably.
Can we edit that out?
We need to allow laws to pass with the majority vote.
Simple majority enough? Get it, guys? The majority? Bah. All those opposed?
Me!
Damn it, Langdon.
Under Pinckney's dookie proposal.
Jonathan, that's not really funny.
51% would be enough to pass a law. What if almost all of us disagree with the law? You expect me to tolerate it? Because it's a fact of life, not everyone is going to agree with me?
That would be nice.
That would be nice.
Disgusting. That doesn't ring true with my understanding of freedom.
Gag.
We will not be enslaved.
Langdon tried to say the S word.
Chill, bro. Chill, John. Just chill.
You patronize your wife with that mouth? Blech. Strike that comment from the record, Madison.
I am so sorry you all had to hear that.
Rule number one of the convention, don't ever say the S word. Talking point number three, making the new constitution easier to amend. Hey, and here comes Maryland's James McHenry standing his ground.
If we don't make this new constitution into something that can be fixed or changed, we're going to find ourselves in the exact same place in a few years. I'm not perfect. David Barney is not perfect. William Patterson is a mess, along with the entire state of New Jersey. So, we're okay with the fact that this new constitution won't be perfect. I call for the amendment process to be changed.
How exactly?
I don't know. Something with fractions, maybe?
Ha 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 ha.
fractions. Based on his oration skills and overall unremarkabilityness, I am most certainly the superior James.
Yes, James Madison has declined any interviews with me from now until he's ready because he wants to take notes for himself about the various delegates. Nerd. Madison rises from his seat. He finally has something to say to me. What kind of things would you want the audience to know about you, Madison?
A magician never reveals his secrets.
You're not a magician, you're just a framer.
A framer never reveals
his... Listen, are you going to tell us your proposal or not? Because we have plenty of delegates behind you who will be willing to share.
Basically...
You don't have to be this close to the mic.
You know how Virginia is the biggest state in the country?
Sure.
When Congress is voting for legislation to be passed, our votes should count for much more than, like, Delaware, because... Well, Delaware.
Delaware was the first state admitted to the Union.
That's their only bragging right.
Fair.
I simply believe representation in Congress should rely on population alone. Bigger state, bigger voice, bigger choice.
That'll be interesting to witness.
Fellas, I have an idea. Does anyone know how many citizens Virginia has exactly?
747,000, give or take.
Right. And how many people live in your state, Bedford?
Gunning Bedford Jr.
Hi.
Represents the state of Delaware. He declined to explain his overall goal here at the Constitution, which leads one to assume he has no overall goals here.
58,000?
58,000 and...
94.
In what world should we be represented by one single congressman when we are 12 times larger? I'll tell you what world. England. In this nation, in this Constitution, states should be represented fairly, which means representatives should reflect state populations.
What you're trying to say is Delaware should have one representative.
And we should have 12.
We should have 12. We should have 12. We should have 12. We should have 12.
This is the most smoothly I've ever seen a decision go down. I'm actually impressed with these guys.
Sir, permission to speak.
Permission granted or whatever. I don't even care anymore.
Hey, hi. It's New Jersey's very own William Patterson, and I'm calling bull. This is not okay. Who thinks this is okay? Like, seriously, is that what Channing does to the foolish?
I can't answer any of those questions.
I don't expect you to. This is not the spirit of our system. I thought the whole point of us coming together as a union was that we're all going to be equal parts of our country. I've had enough New Jersey slander.
Oh, brother.
Gentlemen!
A hush blankets the crowd.
Virginia only wants representatives to be decided by population size because it means states like them would suddenly have more power. My state of New Jersey is just as important as any other state, as even Delaware. We should have just as much a say as they do.
Can you all leave Delaware out of this?
Yes, you should have just as much say in the government. But clearly, there's something important about my state, so it's sensible for our votes to be prioritized. We are doing something right.
Meh.
That indifferent meh was Luther Martin of Maryland, recipient of the least rhythmic sounding name of the English Language Award.
Perhaps Madison is right, McHenry. Some of the greatest leaders in our short history. Looking at you, General.
Oh, stop.
Leaders come from these populated countries. Influence is about status, after all.
See that door over there, Martin?
It's a finely constructed door.
Could you show us how it works, please?
Certainly. You simply rotate this knob and push open. And then you close it. And now I'm locked outside the room.
Now you're locked outside the room. Do you know why you're locked outside the room?
For being a dissenting opinion within your own group.
Oh, for being a dissenting opinion with my own group.
Yes. I only kicked him out because he agreed with the other James.
Tensions are at an all-time high.
Excuse me, but as a proud New Hampshirean...
Hampshirean is not a real word.
I stand with New Jersey's plan. If you are from a small state and you are okay with representation based on population, you are willingly giving up your speech in this nation. New Hampshire cannot and will not accept this if the proposal is passed. All the large states are going to do is gut our power and leave us unable to make decisions. In fact, we can become our own country and not ally with you in any way. So, ha!
What if that happens?
Come again?
Perhaps we're doing this to get rid of the weak links. Natural selection taking its course. To a point where the only states worth listening to are the populist ones. What are you going to do about it?
What can we do about it?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You're the one who came up with this idea.
I didn't think I'd get this far.
We are very much outnumbered. If we do a vote now, there goes our congressional representation.
If this proposal passes, our alliance will implode.
Boom!
That's the sound of our alliance. All of us small states will leave. Maybe we'll be our own countries. Maybe we'll ally together. But we will not stay a part of a country that does not treat us like equals.
The room begins to descend into chaos when, lo and behold,
both!
My name is Roger Sherman. I represent the beautiful state of Connecticut. I was doodling on my project because the Constitution stuff gets a little stressful for the old noggin. But I was like, why don't we incorporate both ideas?
You seem excited to announce this compromise.
It's a great compromise. I'm quite proud of it. Let's make a compromise. How about a two-house legislature? One will follow the Virginia plan and will give each state a number of representatives based on population size. We can call that the House of Representatives. And then we will have a second legislature called the Senate. That one will allow each state to elect two representatives regardless of size. That means each House of Congress will have to vote on a proposal before it becomes a law.
Excuse me? Hi.
This is Caleb Strong of Massachusetts. First of all, are you okay, Strong?
No.
May I ask why?
I'm going to have to say the S word.
Dear Lord, good luck out there.
Thank you for your hard work, but I hate this. Are you telling me in the House of Representatives slavery?
Strong is cut off by wailing and hollering. I love my job.
He said the S word. Do not say the S word. That is not okay.
But isn't that what y'all do? Partake in the slave trade?
Boy, what is wrong with you?
Did we not say we weren't going to use the S word? So can someone tell me why I'm hearing the S word?
Strong attempted to bring up slavery at the Constitutional Convention. South Carolina has the largest domestic slave market in the United States. You can see the problem now.
It's not truly slavery per se. It's more of a non-consensual farming.
Are you telling me that in the House of Representatives, slave states are going to have a lot of power in the government because they are counting slaves as citizens they are representing? They should not be able to control other human beings.
He's on the right track. We could finally prohibit slavery in America.
Slaves cannot be counted as a part of a state's population of citizens.
Caleb, yes!
They must be counted as property.
Caleb, no!
We're gonna leave again.
Guys,
hey guys! Guys, listen up, you dirty chamber pots!
Whoa.
Let's make a compromise. I said let's make a freaking compromise! Thank you. Bedford, Patterson, Beerly, and Langford. I totally get that you're upset, and I'd be too. Why don't we agree slave states can count 3/5 of their slaves towards population? They can count most of their slaves, but not all their slaves, towards how much power they get in the House of Representatives.
I don't see a problem.
Except the whole slavery part, but okay.
All those in favor?
Aye!
Sherman never said all of his compromises were great. Talking point number 5. I am sitting here with undoubtedly Rookie of the Year, in terms of congressional approval, that is, Alexander Hamilton. Now, Hamilton, what exactly do you plan to do after this 1 hour break?
I am planning to propose a college of some sort.
Okay, whatever that means, I wish you luck.
I don't know who the hell he thinks he is. Bastard sails in from the Caribbean because of some scary wind and water.
Alexander Hamilton is getting an ear chewing from William Blount of North Carolina. And it's called a hurricane.
You really expect your average farmer in the middle of nowhere to be informed enough to always choose the best president?
He just proposed a barrier between the people and the election of the president. A college of some sort. The Electoral College.
Wasn't that the judgment of the people to bring us all here to this room to try and figure out what to do about our messed up constitution? You didn't doubt their wisdom then.
You're a messed up constitution.
Comeback game is quite strong.
All we have to do is use the number we settled on for Congress to see how many electors each state gets. Don't boo me, I'm right.
No, he's not. What we need to do is trust the will of the people, since that is what it means to be a true democracy.
No, 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 you're not listening. What if people choose an immoral, uneducated, unprepared candidate who could lead this country off a cliff?
If we're lucky enough, maybe we'll elect a man who's all three.
Guys, let's compromise.
And why are you so eager to offer solutions?
I just want to see a real nice country come together. And if compromises are the way to do it, then why not?
Yes, because the last compromise went so smoothly.
Ouch.
I hate Blount. He is very mean to me, and I don't like it.
Welcome to America.
Electoral college? More like a safety school.
Yeah! Order!
You Yankee.
Dad,
tell Blount that I'm going to run a vote, he's going to have to put up with it, and that he's a coward.
Blount, Hamilton says...
I heard. Your Excellency.
Gross.
Tell Hamilton I'll rest my case as long as he agrees to never look in my direction for as long as he lives.
It won't be too long.
Are you boys done? Because I'm about ready to secede from this room. Have we come to a decision?
Blount and I both believe that the Electoral College is an integral part of democracy, and we would be dunces to let this idea slip between our fingers.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hope this doesn't backfire. All those in favor of an Electoral College?
Aye! Nay!
Oh, goody. I pronounce this convention convened.
That's not really what convened means, but okay.
Go forth and be merry.
If you had one word to describe this experience from May to August, what would it be? Hamilton?
Fulfilling.
Blount?
Pathetic.
Strong?
Spicy.
Washington?
Complicated.
Madison?
Exciting.
Patterson?
Insulting.
Martin?
Brief.
Langdon?
Mediocre.
Bedford Jr.?
Satisfying.
McHenry?
Weird.
Franklin?
Savory.
Sherman?
Cooperative.
Pinckney?
Stressful.
Brearley?
Unconventional.
Unconventional.
See men from diverse backgrounds.
No, thank you.
This is Word of Mouth.
Your questions answered.
Your state explored. I'm Erica Janik, here with Nick Capodice and Hannah McCarthy. Before the break, we heard the winning radio drama from our Civics 101 student contest. And now let's hear more about the student behind it, Adia Sambaqui. Tell me a little bit about her, you guys. So Adia's 15 years old. She's a student at Springfield Renaissance School in Springfield, Massachusetts, which having listened to that, just knowing that a 15-year-old young woman wrote that, it's pretty knockout. In my opinion. Absolutely. How did you guys go about actually doing the production for it? So after going through a bunch of edits with her script, we drove down to the Springfield Renaissance School. We brought a bunch of audio gear with us. We did a read-through with the 18 students who Adia had cast. And then we did, as quickly as possible, a recording of the entire thing live there on stage. Wow. And yeah. Adia actually came up here to visit us in Concord. And while she was here, we got a chance to talk with her a bit about herself and how she got the idea for the production. All right, let's hear that.
I am Adia Sambaqui.
And what do you want to do in the future? What's your plan for post-high school?
Ooh, I know I'm going to go to college. I know that. I'm interested in politics and how people in power use their power to make society better or worse. I definitely can see myself being a political analyst and being like a consultant for maybe television shows or websites, like corporations who want to know how important like identity politics is for their work, because it's proving to be a lot more important. So when the year 2035 comes and most of America is, I use this term lightly, like taken over by like people of color, then like corporations will understand how it is to have relationships with these people of color and what we want and what we desire and like how long we've been waiting to become the majority of America and what that's going to look like after 2035.
Where did you get the idea for unconventional?
I'm a huge dork. Obviously, if you could tell by my existence, Hamilton fan. I love history in general. I wrote the pitch for this. I wrote and recorded the pitch for this using my recording app on my phone under my aunt's bed because that was the quietest place in my loud house. The real idea of doing the Constitutional Convention came from a project, like a simulation that we were doing because we were learning about the Articles of Confederation and how they sucked. So,
Wait, why did they suck so bad?
Oh, gosh. It's a history exam now.
I know. I kind of know some of the answers to that one.
Wow. You don't know? The Articles of Confederation sucked so bad. It gave too much power to the states and not enough power to the federal government because they believed that too much power in the federal government would basically be a monarchy. And, well, they had a bad experience with that, to say the least. So the Articles of Confederation did not give much power to the federal government, and it took forever to get articles from the Articles of Confederation to be amended, or removed entirely, because you need a supermajority in order to overturn that. And well, people like being difficult. It's like a huge basis of like history. So that didn't work. And then like 10 years of it not working, they're like, stop, Constitutional Convention. Get everyone here. Let's figure this ish out. And then everyone, except Rhode Island, went there. They showed up. They showed out. And here we are 200 and so years later.
So when I spoke to you about casting for the show, you said you exclusively wanted to cast women as the framers, and specifically women of color. Were you able to do that?
Heck yeah. The thing is that if I want my vision of like a truly like multi-diverse like media and like content being a part of like American culture, like movies, music, TV, then I have to be someone who sets that example. And so with my casting of women of color, not only was it a giant, you know, heck you to like people who refuse to cast women of color in these sort of like historical projects, but it kind of gave the Constitutional Convention like a very contemporary like look. So it was definitely very intentional, and I'm glad that it turned out the way it did, and I'm super proud of making that decision.
Okay, I want to be Audia when I grow up.
Yeah, Hannah and I kept talking about this thing about someone who is so capable that president is not even enough for Audia Sambaqui.
They're going to have to invent a new higher level gig for her.
Yeah.
So we're going to jump back a little bit in history before the Constitutional Convention to the Declaration of Independence, as told through the musical 1776. Are you guys familiar with this musical?
Well, I am now. I have to share with you guys, on Tuesday night, Manchester had their fireworks, and I'm standing out there watching these fireworks, and I start to hear like John Adams singing, what is the song? Is Anybody There?
Yeah.
And I'm like tearing up. There was something about having done all of that research into 1776 and watching it a bunch of times and then experiencing Independence Day celebration, I felt more patriotic than I have ever felt during fireworks.
That's amazing. How about you, Nick?
There is nothing in the world that I know better than the musical 1776.
When was the first time you watched it?
I watched it sort of as a joke. It was put on the machine during the 4th of July when I was about 12 years old to keep me busy while everybody else had fun at a party, because I was a troublemaking child. And I watched it, and I took the tape home, and I watched it again every day for years, years and years and years. It was the only tape. When I had days off from school, I would kind of put it on in the background. I'd play the trumpet along to it.
Really?
Yeah, I know every single line, every single breath of 1776, that movie version with William Daniels, Howard Da Silva, Ken Howard.
I love that movie, too.
You do, too, Erica. Yeah, when did you first watch it?
I grew up watching it. My dad loved that movie, and he used to watch it all the time. And I actually, to be honest, did not like it as a young child, because I was just like, what is this thing? But then by the time I was a teenager, I really was like, oh, actually, this is amazing. And I, too, know every single word and every song. And I've actually seen the production as well. And my mom was very embarrassed one of the times that we went to see it because my dad and I were singing all of the songs in the theater. I'm sure everyone loved us.
Do you have a favorite song for the musical?
Which is the one that's like, they want me to quit.
They say, don't give up the fight. Still but to England I say,
good night, forever good night. Oh, I love that song.
That's the one that ends, is anybody there? Does anybody care?
Okay, so
does
that's,
does anybody see what I see? And Dr. Lyman Hall says, yes, Mr. Adams, I do.
So 1776 is a musical that is still being performed. And Hannah, you did a story about a recent production and the discussion that play still evokes.
Earlier this week, we celebrated Independence Day with hot dogs and fireworks and stars and stripes all over our clothes. We waved flags and lit sparklers and watched parades. And somewhere in the glow of that holiday, there's the understanding that a bunch of men got together on July 4th and signed the document that would make us free. Of course, that isn't exactly how it worked. The whole process got rolling, actually, in mid-May. And there was some voting on the 1st, and then the 4th, and then the 9th. The signing itself didn't happen until August 2nd, and England didn't get the news until the 10th. And this whole process was fraught with the fear of committing treason, with intense debates and pig-headedness and less than savory compromises. The Declaration of Independence very nearly did not happen, it was a messy and complicated process. Luckily, there's a musical that breaks it all down for you.
It's a masterpiece, I say. They will cheer every word, every letter. I wish I felt that way. I believe I can put it better.
Earlier this week, I sat down with Perry Allison. She's a producer and director in Vermont, and this spring, she staged a production of 1776 at the Briggs Opera House in White River Junction.
Is the story of the Founding Fathers and the work leading up to and the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
And may the British burn my land if I can't deliver to your hand a resolution on independence.
The show takes place in Philadelphia during the meeting of the Second Continental Congress and documents the bureaucratic slog of passing something as monumental as declaring independence from England.
For one solid year, they have been sitting here, a whole year, doing nothing.
The show had been on Perry's radar for a while. She'd seen a great production of it, thought it was a great musical. But after the election last year, she started to think of 1776 as both entertainment and tool.
You know, when the election happened early last year, I thought, I feel like this might be the right time to bring out this play.
1776 isn't so much a celebration of our nation's founding as a closer look at the politicking and debate amongst the men who managed to do it.
So the Founding Fathers were kind of a mixed bag. You know, they were from all different parts of, you know, the country, or at least the East Coast primarily. And they had very different points of view. And John Adams, who's the central character, was the one leading the charge for independence from Great Britain. And many of the colonies didn't want to do that.
And still, this Congress refuses to grant any of my proposals on independence, even so much as the courtesy of open debate.
Perry and her team booked talkbacks after every performance. Professors and state reps and senators led discussions about the realities of public servitude, which Perry says was a huge success. But there were some who wanted more from a play about the early days of the United States.
We actually got some very interesting early pushback from some people in the community about the exclusion of the discussion of race, which is actually very intrinsic in the play. So we added a lot of people to our talkback speakers to try and be able to speak to that, to speak to race, to speak to gender. We tried to adjust and accommodate the feedback we were getting from the community.
Perry did choose to go gender blind with her casting. John Hancock, for example, was played by a woman. But when it comes down to it, 1776 is a musical about powerful white men and a couple of their wives. It follows just one course of events in the complicated and often ugly history of the country's founding, which prompted some to call the production itself a whitewashing of our nation's history.
So the first thing I would say is it is a piece of art, and when we license the play from the publisher, we agree to present it as written. So we didn't have an opportunity to change it, and it's a moment in time. It is part of our history. We can't change our history. We can reflect on the consequences of it, but you know, there's a point of view that says if those men hadn't done what they'd done, the world would be a different place. I don't know what it would be, but it was the beginning of what became our history.
A pivotal moment in 1776, a moment often left out of grade school history lessons, is the debate about slavery that nearly stopped the Declaration of Independence short.
Mr. Adams is now calling our black slaves Americans. Are they not?
Yes, they are. They're people and they're here. There's any other requirement, I've never heard of it.
They are here, yes, but they are not people, sir. They are property.
No, sir, they are people who are being treated as property.
Thomas Jefferson condemned slavery in an earlier draft of the Declaration. Of course, Jefferson himself was a slave owner. And the North, though ostensibly representing an anti-slavery stance, was a beneficiary of the triangle trade, making rum with sugar from slave plantations and selling that rum to Africa. When 1776 premiered on Broadway in 1969, the show was celebrated for confronting the mess and hypocrisy that was a part of our nation's founding. The fact is, Congress compromised on slavery in order to get the thing passed. But a production of 1776 in 2018, Perry says, has to be prepared for a different kind of response.
There may be people that will object, but, you know, I believe it. This play creates an opportunity to have a good conversation about it.
Despite the pushback, Perry says, the audience really took to the play. It meant something to them to see the mess and compromise and unlikely success of a radical move in our history.
And I didn't expect this, honestly, but in the feedback that I heard from many people in the audience, people were really moved by it. And I think they were moved because it helped remind them how much they love their country.
They want me to quit. They say, John, give up the fight. Still to England I say, good night forever, good night.
Perry says she produced 1776 because she wanted to do something at a time when some were feeling helpless as far as their government goes, and that the history behind this musical is proof positive of the power of perseverance.
I think that we're pretty resilient as a country, and certainly when you see the story unfold in this play, John Adams is the perfect example of that. He just doesn't give up.
Perry says that feedback for 1776 was enough for them to consider taking the show on the road. Though that didn't work out this time around, you can still experience 1776 for yourself here in New Hampshire at Concord's Hatbox Theater. The show premiered on July 6th and will run through Sunday the 15th. So fake news is always, for lack of a better word, in the news these days.
And it seems like it's just in the news, but it turns out that fake news has been with us for a long time.
Yeah, I actually read an article on PolitiFact about George Washington battling fake news. There were some forged letters that appeared to show that he privately sympathized with the British monarchy and that he didn't actually believe Americans were ready for independence. The letters were fake, but they spread everywhere. And Washington grew really sick of hearing about them. And in the story, it says, and I think this is kind of a dilemma that a lot of people face, is he's like, do I respond to them because that draws more attention to them? Or do I just ignore them and hope that they go away? He ignored them for a while, but then they just kept resurfacing. So finally, many years later, he actually wrote a rebuttal of these letters.
It's a shame nobody rebutted the fake news that he had wooden teeth.
So apparently fake news is as American as apple pie.
Yeah, and a few weeks ago, producer Taylor Quimby told us about a very New Hampshire-specific fake news story that led him to investigate further. Here's Taylor.
There's a squat gray building off the side of Daniel Webster Highway in Merrimack, shaped vaguely like a castle. Its name is the same as its signature product.
They're huge. I mean, the King Cone is probably like close to a foot in height. It's massive. They can barely fit it through the window.
This is Sarah Burke. She grew up in Merrimack and goes to the King Cone at least four or five times every summer.
It's soft serve. It's delicious. They also have great tacos, which is another reason that I go.
The King Cone is iconic. It has been serving up soft serve for a whopping 46 years. What if I told you that it was going to close down at the end of the year?
That would be pretty sad. Very sad, actually.
Indeed, King Cone fans were shocked and distraught to see a news post in May that announced in all caps,
"Breaking news. King Cone and Merrimack to permanently close shop after summer 2018.
I heard that it was.
Oh, did you? Did
yeah.
you?
And then I heard that that was not true.
The post was a hoax, a prank, written by a Facebook page called the New England News Network. They have a cheapish logo and an adequately newsy-sounding name, but they don't have a website or a print edition either. They only exist on Facebook, where you have to go to the About Us section to find out, quote, "We are a satirical news source based out of New Hampshire. Proceed with caution." Of course, if you do scroll through some of their other posts, the headlines, and it's all just headlines, might give it away.
"Breaking news. New Hampshire National Guardsmen deploy to Canadian border to control illegal flow of maple syrup pouring in from Canada."
Sometimes the comedy is political. Sometimes it pokes fun at local haunts. Most of their stories get a few dozen shares at most. But over the past few months, these King Cone-style fake closing down posts have been getting more and more attention, which is probably why New England News Network has made them a regular part of their comedic repertoire. In May, a story went up about the Alvern Memorial Chapel in Nashua being torn down. Not true, 419 shares. Then came the King Cone Post, not true, 658 shares. On June 1st, they hit the viral payload. The Post said,
"Breaking news. Popular New Hampshire theme park set to close down this fall."
Underneath was a logo for Storyland, the fairy tale inspired park in Glen, New Hampshire, and in big red letters, the words "closing down." Not true. 17,422 shares. The comments in this post are like an online war zone. Duped users share the post, tagging friends and adding lots of weeping emojis. Then fake news warriors scream in all caps, "fake news," and call for the post to be taken down. And fans of the page tell them to shut up and enjoy the joke. This is part of the fun, they say. Lauren Hawkins is director of marketing at Storyland.
So by the time we started our workday, there were endless Facebook messages. The phones were ringing off the hook. And we had at least a full day of just nonstop telling people it was fake news.
The post spread so quickly, local news took notice. Stories debunking the rumor appeared on WMTV in Maine, in the Concord Monitor, even on Snopes.com in the Boston Globe. Lauren says Storyland took it all in stride.
No one was mad. We don't like that they are attacking businesses with this satirical site, but we understand that there's free speech and they can make jokes as they please.
So there was no discussion of seeing if there was a case for libel or anything like that?
We tried. We reported them to Facebook, but there was no way to reach this site. They don't allow you to message them. They have no contact details. So we, at this time, have no way of talking with them.
So you don't know who's behind it?
We do not.
But I do. When I first discovered New England News Network and the King Cone Post, my first question was, why? Was it a personal vendetta? Did the writers have something against George Safran? I didn't understand the joke, so I thought there had to be more to the story. I decided to track down the writers, who up until now have remained anonymous. It was time to play private eye. I scrolled through the New England News Network's feed until I found their very first posts from 2016, and I messaged the people who liked them. They got back to me right away. I guess investigative work is a lot less glamorous than it used to be. The first person I talked to was 35-year-old Vincenzo Marsden.
Believe it or not, Vincenzo is not at home, so leave a message at the beep.
I am aware. He's a self-described social media manager, actor, voice actor, and occasional political consultant. Vincenzo told me the original name of the group was the Nashua News Network.
I wouldn't say there's not a lot of guide rails. Kind of like The Onion, but for New England.
He told me to talk to his friend William Steves, the creator of the page.
He's one of those people with like the big notebook with 1,000 napkins in it. He's just an all-around creative guy, you know. Some of the stuff he comes up with is brilliant.
So I messaged William next. He wouldn't speak to me on the phone, but he did message back to say that he started the Nashua News Network to cover the 2016 election. He hoped to make something that felt like a cross between The Daily Show and Reno 911.
Well, from all of us at NNN, we want to thank you for joining us.
Steves sent me a link to their old YouTube page. They only posted a few videos back then. This one is a badly mic'd sketch comedy piece about a skateboarding policeman.
Hi, I'm Doug Powers, skateboard cop.
While he was making videos with his friends, William says a couple of other guys were in charge of the Facebook page. In his message, William said he didn't like the direction they took it in, though. Some of the posts were mean-spirited, and he abandoned the project pretty early on. But Steves did give me another name, Jonathan Markham.
If you look back early on, it was very tame, almost lame. Like, there was nothing really true mean-spirited. I feel it's gotten more mean-spirited in just in the past, I don't know, 8 months.
Jonathan Markham is officially the author of the King Cone and Storyland posts. For all intents and purposes, he is the New England News Network. He works third shift and publishes stories on his breaks. He says his fans love to watch the drama play out in the comments.
People have responded more to inappropriateness. People like to read, the heroin epidemic is going on right now, and people respond really well to seeing like a story about heroin.
Jonathan's got fat jokes and junkie jokes.
Breaking news, Manchester. Area heroin addict relapses.
Posts that are vaguely homophobic. Fake posts about immigration raids.
Breaking news, President Donald J. Trump orders ICE raids at a popular New Hampshire restaurant, La Coretta.
New England News Network is designed to get a rise out of people, to stir up trouble in the comments, and give his fans something to gawk at. But the closing down posts, Jonathan told me, those are different. They're sort of a social experiment. To see whether people would share something without double-checking it first.
I don't know if you remember early on when it was Nashua News Network. I made a post saying that Hampton Beach was infected with chlamydia. So that there was a mass chlamydia outbreak at Hampton Beach. It took like 15 minutes for it to have, like, I want to say, like 5,000 shares. People were losing their minds, like, oh, I'm going to be going to Hampton Beach this weekend. I don't want all my family to get chlamydia. The only way to get chlamydia is through sexual contact. Like, I'm not going to get it by going in the water. No. People just believed it, and it was unbelievable.
Jonathan says he's got nothing against King Cone or Storyland. He grew up going to those places. He loves them, he said. His comedy is aimed at the people who are fooled into sharing fake news. The joke is on them.
A lot of people enjoy it. And, you know, if someone can laugh at it, I feel like my job is done.
While I've been researching this story, I read up on some legal blogs about defamation, and I spoke with a lawyer. I wanted to know if any of the closing down posts potentially broke the law, whether businesses like Storyland would have grounds for a lawsuit. In order to prove defamation, the lawyer told me, you have to get past three important hurdles. First, would a reasonable person think the post is factual? Hard to prove in court. Second hurdle, was the content shared with knowledge of falsity? Yes, definitely. Third, can the victim claim damages? Was the business really hurt by the post? Again, hard to prove. The lawyer I spoke with said Storyland might have a case, but it's not cut and dried. So maybe the question to ask isn't, is this legal, but is this funny? So I reached out to a veteran satirist.
There used to be a lot of, like, sort of onion copycats that weren't very funny, but there's actually some good ones now. And, I'll look at them and think, oh, that's a good joke. I wish we'd done that. Or there's a funny joke here, but they didn't quite get it.
This is Danny Mulligan, a senior editor at The Onion. I asked him to take a look at the New England News Network's post about Storyland and see what he thinks.
They don't actually do articles. They just do headlines and pictures, and this is the headline.
Okay. So it says, breaking news, popular New Hampshire theme park set to close down this fall. Okay. do you want me to look at this from a comedy perspective?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's not a joke. It's just a statement of something happening that would be a normal thing to happen.
But it's not. So this isn't true.
So it's not true. Okay. So this is false news, fake news.
So the New England News Network is okay. A satirical website.
So satire, let me put it this way. One of the terms that gets used by people who write comedy is you want to punch up. You know, meaning you make fun of someone who works in the White House or someone who's a congressperson, someone who has power, someone who has a lot of money. You know, you don't make fun of homeless people. You don't make fun of historically marginalized people. You know, if the comedy you're doing is about, like, hoodwinking people less sophisticated than you are or less in the know than you are, that's just pretty lame.
I mean, well, like you said, so
I don't think that's satire. I should put it that way. I think that's a prank. I would call that, like, a practical joke.
So to the writers of the New England News Network, what would be your, like, first pieces of advice for moving forward with writing?
Think about why you're doing what you're doing. I mean, humor and satire can be a very entertaining thing, a very powerful thing. And if you're going to use the tool of satire, you know, do something worthwhile with it. That's what I would say.
Since June, Jonathan Markham has posted fake stories about the closing of Old Orchard Pier in Maine and the Pheasant Lane Mall in Nashua. But they don't seem to be getting the same traction. So lately, he's taken to putting up posts about his eventual unmasking. I think maybe he got a little nervous once I started poking around. Still, I doubt anybody will care.
His fans just want to read the comments.
That's it for Word of Mouth this week. The show was produced by me, Erica Janik, with Hannah McCarthy, Nick Capodice, Taylor Quimby, Justine Paradise, Jimmy Gutierrez, and Jackie Helbert. Maureen McMurray is the lead fife in our fife and drum band. Special thanks to the amazing Adia Sambaqui and all her friends who helped make Unconventional possible at the Springfield Renaissance School. Music in this episode from Poddington Bear, Blue Dot Sessions, and Passion Hi-Fi. Find more Word of Mouth at wordofmouthradio.org. See you next time.